without the tie is Mark Walsh. He's the campaign director for the Illinois Coalition, or Council, Against Handgun Violence, which is, according to their website, the oldest and largest statewide organization in the country working to prevent gun violence. Next to him is Richard Pearson, who is the executive director of the Illinois State Rifle Association, and he is an award-winning shooter. So I've got just a couple of questions that I'm going to start out with, and you guys can feel free to toss any up that you've got. And my first one is to both of you, are we going to see some kind of concealed carry legislation in Illinois, or is this just going to be something where the court ruling is going to dictate what happens?
I believe we will see some language come out of the legislative session this year that regarding carrying of concealed weapons in public places. I think the alternative is if we don't see something, then we'll be in the situation of constitutional carry. And I don't think the majority of people want to see that in their community. So I do think we will see some dealing with the issue. Sure. Constitutional carry is basically that if there's no permitting process in place, that people would have the right to carry openly or concealed any weapon they would want.
And I would actually agree with that. I mean, I hope that we come up with a bill. I don't want to go to constitutional carry either, because I think that you know, there needs to be some restrictions. There need to be some training. We probably disagree on how all that works. But basically, I think that the permitting process is something that we should do. And I'm looking forward to get a bill. I believe that we will get a bill before the end of the legislative session.
What's the current legislative landscape in moving towards that bill? Is this going to be something where it's a last-minute push, or is there going to be some deliberation to it?
I would say the landscape is very cratered right now.
Yeah. Looks like the moon.
There's a couple bills out there. There's a couple ideas out there. I think the fact that we've started, or the legislative process has started earlier on this issue than a lot of other ones facing the state is a good thing. I do think that there's a lot of discussion and education that needs to be in place about not only the types of permits, whether it be, as we favor, a May issue, which gives local law enforcement some leeway in issuing the permits, or the State Rifle Association and the NRA, who propose a shall issue that state police would issue. I think those are some of the discussions that we need to have. We've seen repeatedly the amendment process working out, or at least amendments being called on both sides. I wouldn't say working out.
Yeah, working out is not the right term.
But I do think that's, I know from discussions I've had with legislators, and I'm sure it's similar for Richard, that it is an education process that has to be part of the equation. And so I think sooner rather than later, I don't think this will be the last week of session. Maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part, but I don't think it'll be a last week issue dealt with.
I would agree with Mark. I don't think it's going to be a last week. It better not be a last week of session, or it will be a big mess.
Right.
Of course, not that it's not a big mess already. You know, we've been seeing bills. You know, we have a couple bills that we favor, HB 1284, I believe it is, in the Senate. I haven't been over there, but I've been pinned down in the House. And 997. Essentially, they're the same bill. And but we've seen a variety of bills brought forth with a variety of amendments attached to those bills. There are three bills out there right now, 1155, 1156, and 1157, all House bills. And I believe between the bills, there's 86 or 7 amendments between all those bills. And they do everything that you can imagine, except make coffee in the morning. It's the only thing they haven't proposed.
Next Tuesday.
Next week, yeah, exactly. And so we've seen every type of idea, particularly gun control idea, attached and debated to those attached to those bills in an amendment form. Those bills were all shell bills, which simply said that we're going to make a technical change of the criminal code. And one of the things that's happened is I've never seen a process like this.
No.
And most people have never seen a process like this in their memory. And so we simply, instead of proposing a bill and debating the merits paragraph by paragraph or section by section, we produce a lot of amendments with every kind of idea out there, and we have a committee of the whole. And so one session, as you probably all know, was 9.5 hours. Another one was 3. We've had committee meetings from one end of the state to the other. And out of this, we have gotten nothing. I mean, that's really where we are right now. It's not that the people on both sides are not sincere. I think it's the process. Instead of going through the committee process, we keep meeting as a committee of the whole. And if any of you have served on committees, if you want to get something done, have 5 people do it. If you want to get nothing done, have 10 or more people do it. And that's kind of where we are.
Do you agree with that, Mark?
Yeah, I do. I think, as Richard said, this is something we've never seen before, or I've never seen before in the legislative process. I think while we're getting those different issues out that I mentioned earlier, I think it's also a very complicated way because we're not everything's in this kind of legislative limbo, and I think it adds to some of the issues about getting a final bill prepared. So I would agree.
One of the things that
I'm sorry. How do we make our listeners understand what's happening if they're not new to what's happening at the Capitol? Legislative limbo is just about as vague as you can.
Well,
what's happening and what should the general public understand about what is happening?
Yeah. The problem is it is vague.
Right.
See, what's going on here? We're the large. You've heard of all of you. All of you cover the state capitol. The largest caucus at the state capitol is the posturing caucus. Okay, people just posturing before the electorate. And so we really haven't gotten anywhere. We're actually no further now than we were the first day of session.
Right.
It's not that Mark's side hasn't tried. It's not that our side hasn't tried. I think we're frustrated by the process. What happened was we took the normal committee process where these ideas are vetted before committee members, like the Judiciary Committee would be a good example, who are made up of people who understand and know the law. And when we go to the Committee of the Whole, you may have some people in the legislature who are very experts on child welfare or education or environmental issues, but they are not experts on the law, particularly in the criminal code. And so we debate this among people who are not familiar exactly with the topic. And so I think that's one of the problems.
Have you made your frustration with the process clear to the Senate President?
I think that the Speaker of the House and the Senate President, and probably even the Governor, are know about how frustrated we are. But I think that they're probably also frustrated also, I would say.
This really isn't too much disagreement here because I would agree with Richard. I feel that we've made our issues with the process clear to everyone. And I do feel that there is frustration across the board. But when I said legislative limbo, what I meant was, you look at some of these amendments that have passed and they counter
other amendments.
So there's this just jumble of, and I don't know, I mean, I don't know how, I've had the same frustration going back to our partners and they're saying, what's going on in Springfield? And you start explaining it and their eyes glaze over and my eyes glaze over and we go back and forth.
I mean, we have one bill, was it 1156? with 54 amendments.
1155.
1155 with 54 amendments on it. I have never, ever heard of a bill with 54 amendments on it. But what Mark is saying is a lot of those amendments don't have superseding language.
Right.
So if you amendment 7 is passed, it would supersede Amendment 5, which may deal with the same topic. So we have a bill here with that has conflicts with its own language.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's frustrating for all of us. There's nothing for us to exactly work on. I mean, we can keep seeing, you know, his supporters. We keep seeing our supporters, that sort of thing. But it's sort of like grasping vanilla pudding. I mean, just sort of.
Are you guys pointing at other states, for example, to follow as far as legislation?
Well, we you know, of course, we're the proponents of concealed carry legislation, and we have kind of patterned ours after we've looked at Kentucky. We have looked at Florida. What we think is that to get to the meat of this issue, I guess, so just talking about what the legislators are doing because they haven't done anything. We think that there needs to be training. We think that there needs to be a process at which you actually shoot at a target, and you have to shoot a certain score to target. What we have proposed is not dissimilar to what the police have to do. All right. It's a 30-shot qualification, very similar to what the police have to do. You know, we don't require as much training as the police because our people, we think that the concealed carry permit holder is only protecting himself, his family, or innocence is the word until the police arrive. So they're not making traffic stops, breaking down crack house doors or anything like that. So they're just there, and they're actually waiting for police assistance. And if they're not waiting for police assistance, they're outside the law.
We've looked at New York and California as kind of our model states. Both of those are what I mentioned earlier about May issue, which allows local discretion in issuing of permits. It's a statewide application process, but there is this local input on who gets a permit. We feel that's very important. We also support training and both classroom and range training. Our standards are probably a little higher as far as percentages of hitting the target and things like that than the proposals that Richard mentioned, but I think those are areas where we can have a conversation and talk about compromise. I also think that what we want to see are some restrictions on where guns are allowed. So, for instance, public transportation has been a big issue. Places that serve alcohol have been an issue. Restrictions on allowing guns on campuses is something that we favor as well. So those are all from existing law. Both California and New York have gone through scrutiny by the courts, and those laws have been upheld. So we feel that those are two of the more stronger state laws that we could model our law after.
Any place where you two agree in terms of people who maybe shouldn't be allowed to get a concealed carry permit? Any kind of restrictions?
Well, we both you know, background checks, you know, that sort of thing. You know, we both agree on that. Illinois is an unusual position, though, because we have the FOID card. So, you know, just to actually, without the state police here, if it would just been me and Mark, if you didn't have a FOID card, you couldn't have touched any gun here. You'd be in violation of the law. So, and the same is true with ammunition. But, you know, we favor shall issue, which means if you pass the background check and pass the class, then you get a permit. We think that may issue leads to discrimination, particularly amongst minorities, and if the sheriff doesn't like you. And that happens. And so, you know, if you're in New York and you're a friend of Mayor Bloomberg, by golly, you can get a permit. But if you're not, you can't. And as simple as that. So we don't think it should be based. It shouldn't be discriminatory on the basis of who or who you know. It's only should be discriminatory on your background and your skill. So, and you know, if we have our bill calls for a passing of 70%, that's the same as the police departments have. You know, so we'll see. You know, I don't see why we should have to be better than the police, nor worse. So, but
what was your rationale for the May issue?
The rationale behind the May issue is, you know, that local law enforcement oftentimes know that there are people who there may not be the actual things that make them a prohibited purchaser filed, whether it be police reports, convicted felons, order of protections. But they local law enforcement knows their community much better than the state police do. Even in Chicago, I was at an event a couple weeks ago with Superintendent McCarthy, the Chicago Police Superintendent, and as people came up and talked to him, he knew who they were. And it wasn't just, you know, celebrities or friends of the mayor or things of that. It was, quote unquote, normal people, some of whom you would not have expected to be talking to the police superintendent because of some of their social activities. But yet they were there. And he was like, oh, you know. So I think you have this effect where or our belief is that if you have local law enforcement making those decisions, you have a better, clearer view of who gets those and who doesn't. And in New York, for instance, in New York City, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, it's just the friends of the mayor that are getting permits. What they also have is that you have to show a need, not a want. So you have to show that there is some reason that you're carrying concealed in public places helps the general safety of the community. And I think that's something we really have to look at, particularly in some of the larger urban areas, not just Chicago, but, you know, you have a huge population density in these areas. And, you know, I don't, our organization and my personal belief is that having more guns in those communities will not make us safer.
See, we disagree with that because we think that if you have a desire and you pass, you should be able to get it. I don't think that any public official should have the ability to say that I don't need to protect myself. And that's really what happens because they then have the power over life and death in certain situations, because if you say that you don't need a permit. One of the most famous people that was told that he didn't need a permit was a guy by the name of Martin Luther King. He said that the police would protect him. He was in no danger. We know how that worked out. Not too good.
Who never carried a gun.
That's right.
And at every thing that Dr. King and the Southern Conference of Leadership did, the first thing they did was say, empty your pockets and open up your bag to make sure you don't have a gun, because a gun will jeopardize everyone's safety. So I just want to point that out.
But he still applied for one. But Bruce Lee also applied for one, by the way.
What do you guys think, realistically, knowing the makeup of the General Assembly now, realistically, what can get to the governor's desk and signed and put into law? Any ideas of what you know can be in there? Not necessarily what your dream bill would be, but what you know can pass.
Well, I don't think that I know. Okay, I will tell you that right now. Because after what we've seen, if you have three bills with 86 or 87 or how many ever amendments there are in there, you can't tell what's going on. You certainly have a lot of vetting and a lot of a discussion, but you know, we can't get to anything concrete. Nothing, no bill has been able to move at all, right? No, I mean, you say, well, it passed out of committee. Okay, it passed out of committee. Got the second reading. All right, that means you can amend it 4 million times. Goes to third reading, never gets called. So we're kind of blocked up there. Yes, sir.
Question for Mark. It seems Stop Concealed Carry Coalition with Lee Goodman are out protesting and calling on the Attorney General to appeal the court ruling. But it seems like, based on what you're saying, is you're accepting the ruling and you want to move forward to make sure legislation is, you know, comprehensive and kind of suits your needs and suits what you want. Is that true? Are you not really in line with groups like the Stop Concealed Carry Coalition on this?
We're not. Our attitude is, and we've seen, for instance, our belief is that the courts have ruled, and as much as we would like to see concealed carry not part of the landscape in Illinois, this has been an ongoing process, and I believe that we believe that it's really become not a matter of if, but a matter of when. And one of the things, as Rachel mentioned at the beginning, we are the oldest statewide group, so we work on national issues with similar versions of us. And one of the groups we work with is in Wisconsin, which was the 49th state to enact concealed carry. They made a decision in their process that they were not going to negotiate and they were not going to be part of the discussion. And Wisconsin has some of the most... the widest ranging concealed carry, certainly in this area. And those are things that we have a concern about. So we've made the decision. We're not out. If the Attorney General decides to appeal, that's on her. But we don't want to turn around on day 174 and go, yes, we should have been a part of this conversation. Which kind of goes to your earlier question, what do we see as areas of compromise. I would say I agree for the most part with Richard that we're not sure as this amendment process plays out what will be in there. But what we did see was when Representative Phelps, as an amendment, his version of 997, the NRA concealed carry bill, when that was called for a vote, it got 67 votes as an amendment. It preempts home rule, which means it needs 3/5, which would be 71. So those votes aren't there. So we've got to start talking about where we can come together and pass something that, you know, at the end of the day, Richard will be unhappy with and I'll be unhappy with, but will accomplish the goal and have some of those things that both of us want. And Richard mentioned we want to make sure, you know, whether it be training requirements, and ours is you have to hit your target 75% and his is 70%. I mean, those are some of the smaller issues that I think there is room to negotiate. Some of the things we want to see besides the May issue are universal background checks, so private sale background check, the reporting of lost or stolen weapons here in Illinois. Those are things that we've seen in other states that help cut down guns going into the illegal market. And I think those are some of the things that we really need to bring up in the discussion.
And do you think when groups like the Stop Concealed Carry Coalition are out on Daily Plaza on a regular basis, does that kind of fracture the message that you're trying to bring to the table, or does that kind of distract from the issue, you think?
I do. I mean, yeah. But it's their right, you know, to do that. At the end of the day, my concern is that whether the Attorney General appeals or not, that people feel that this is something we can just put off, and it's not. And I don't, I mean, Richard said the same thing. None of us want to turn around, or very few of us, on June the 9th and say, oh, look, there's a bunch of people walking with weapons open down, you know, Michigan Avenue or down aisles or wherever we are, because that's just... there needs to be a permitting process and there needs to be some limitations on that.
Are voices from around the state being heard at the Capitol, or do you feel like this discussion and that has happened through the committee of the whole process has been dominated by the government?
Well, people are contacting their legislators constantly. I mean, they are. I mean, you know, when Tuesday comes up, which is gun day at the Capitol, you know, the phones are lit up on both sides, you know. The phones are lit. So people are letting their legislators know. So I don't know that. So they're getting lots of input. But I look at this as kind of like labor negotiations. Why is nothing settled till 2 minutes before midnight? Because we don't have to. But one of these days, we're going to have to. You know, and so... I'm sorry? June 9th. But yet, they can't let it go too much longer, I don't think, because you have to have... You're only going to have to debate this bill out. Four votes doesn't sound like much to you trying to get them. and then it looks like Mount Everest, and you got a teaspoon to move it. But four votes are a lot of votes. All right. So that is something that we both groups have to face is that four vote. Deal here. So,
follow up for you, Mark, regarding the no gun zones. And my question is actually to those areas of our state that are already no gun zones, the state capital being one. There are areas of the state that are police, that are force, armed guards patrol them. Is there any language in any of the legislation that's moving forward that would address the issue of someone entering a guarded building, say a federal building, state building, and how that person would either be turned away, security procedures.
Well, that's another part of the criminal code.
Richard just said the same thing that I was thinking. I think that's already defined in other parts of the criminal code.
Right.
It always, and I think this, as we're seeing where we agree today, I think one of the things Richard and I always agree on as well is that it's very interesting that those places you mentioned, those government buildings, are the first ones that are automatically restricted, even by some of the strongest proponents of concealed carry, which always makes you kind of, if it's such a good policy, why not bring it, why not allow, if you're so supportive of it, why is it you can't bring it into your office?
Well, you wind up with some of these things that are the worst thing that we do, I think, just in general, not only in this, but we make laws that are unenforceable. You have conflicts. You have a radius, but then you have a private property wall, and so these things get to be really complex, and the poor soul that falls in that crack without knowing it is the one that gets hammered, But you're right. If you want to go to the flower shop and pick up roses for your wife or somebody, and you walk in there, you could well be in violation of the Social Security Administration. The other thing, I look around at some of the buildings. I can't tell what they are. I've never not been out on Old Jackson Road, and I happen to notice a few of the nice office buildings along there, It's the IMEA building. I don't know what an IMEA building is. I'm sure you guys do, but I don't. And so you can wander into these things and not even know that you've done it. As far as the carrying firearms into the courthouse and things like that. That used to never be an issue, but you have trial lawyers there, so it's a contentious place, I don't have any problem with that. But some of the other stuff, mass threats is one of the things that we disagree on. You get people mugged and robbed on buses and trains and train platforms, particularly L platforms in Chicago, constantly. That seems to be a place that you would want the ability to protect yourself. You wouldn't want to give that up. So.
Well, I take the L.
That's right, yeah.
To me, the last thing, you're on a crowded platform. And I am a very firm, I get laughed at a lot of times because I'll jump off the bus and, people will be like, you took the bus to where? In Chicago or to L. I'm a firm believer in public transportation. You're on a crowded L stop. To me, the last thing I want, and I've been on them, I'm 43 years old. I first started taking public transportation at age 10. I can count on zero fingers how many times I've seen people mugged or robbed on there. Not saying it doesn't happen, and I've been fortunate, but having a gun in those situations wouldn't help you. And we saw, I was having a conversation a couple days ago, actually, with Ron Holt, whose son Blair was killed on a CTA bus. A guy jumped on there and started shooting. And he's Ron's a Chicago police officer, and we were talking about it. And he was saying, again, the same thing that I feel. You're in a crowded bus. Somebody starts shooting, and then somebody gets up and starts shooting again. You're going to be carrying more people off that bus, either injured or killed. And that's the end of it. And what we're trying to do in this legislation and other things we talk about on this issue is, how do we reduce people from being killed?
See, my view is completely different. If we, almost all of the major mass murders, other than the Gabby Gifford thing, which was kind of in and out, I never did figure that one out, actually, have been in gun-free zones. So if you say that the CTA, Springfield Metropolitan Transit Authority or whatever it is, you can't carry a firearm there. That seems to me, if I'm a criminal and I want to rob somebody, it seems like a fine place to go. You know, we got perfect victims there. We can't fight back. So I'm not saying that everybody on that CTA bus should carry a firearm. I'm just saying that if the possibility is there, it reduces the propensity of a cowardly criminal, and that's what I really think they all are, to go in there and try to mug somebody or take their belongings or beat them up or shoot them or whatever. You know, I think that stops a lot of that. It doesn't stop all, but there is nothing that's going to stop all crime, you know, period. But I think that makes it a decision. If we look at the articles that came out this week about the Newtown shooter. I don't know if you saw that, but he had score sheets laid out on the number of mass murders that have occurred, and he was trying to be the number one guy, and he looked at it as a video game, and he selected the Newtown school because it was the least protected and the one he could get the highest score in. I mean, this is a sicko, all right? He's killing little kids. There's no question about that. But we have sickos out there, and we can't get rid of them. We can't identify them all. They're probably 15 of them within a 10-mile radius of this place. Well, we got the Capitol. We got out there. But anyway, but. Well, I think that's up to the school board. I think that's a local decision, actually. But I think it should be permissible. I know I'm a little older than anybody in here, but I remember, you know, I taught in Kankakee, Bradley, Bourbonnais area when Martin Luther King got shot. And those were horrible, trying times. And I remember a couple of things. One, that the police told us that if we had to take the basketball receipts to the bank, the three teachers could be armed. They weren't going to stop us. You know. Also, remember the police station being boarded up during those times, and the police were in it. So, so a couple of things like that have happened, and you know that influenced me. And so we watch things like this happen. But I'm very much opposed to the gun-free zone. I think it just makes everybody aware that they could be a target. The shooter in Colorado is a perfect example. The only movie theater complex among seven that were in the area that didn't allow concealed carry permits because it's private property was the theater that he shot up, or shot, the people he shot.
Yeah, we're opposed to guns in classrooms and schools. One of the reasons for that being that it creates we don't feel it's a productive learning environment. It's an area where it's almost like kids are in prison trying to learn, and we need to change that and have our education process go up as far as test scores and things like that, because that's one of the things that makes a community safer. More guns. I work with several students who were shot at Virginia Tech. I work with other kids that were shot in school or shot on school grounds. And nobody ever says, I would have felt more safe if my teacher had a gun or my administrator had a gun. And you talk about, speaking of incidents in Colorado, at the school shooting in Columbine, there were armed guards at the door who were the first ones to take gunfire. So you can't say that just because there's a gun in the situation, you're going to be safe.
Are you guys seeing anything in I guess what could be termed the test votes on the amendments, leading you to understand like kind of a strategy that might emerge or anything? Are these test votes telling you anything about where this all might go?
Well, I think that's the purpose of the test votes, but I don't think it's turning out well.
I mean, you know, one of the things, I would agree with Richard, I think that was kind of the goal of doing this. We've seen with, was 2 weeks ago where none of the Republicans voted on anything?
Yeah.
You know, so there's not this emerging pattern, although I would, no, I was going to joke around and say I've got my 60 votes. But one of the things that I do think Richard's right on is that is just that there's no real clear pattern of what's going on. And I think as we have these debates, and Richard brought it up as well, not all of the members of the House are attorneys or well-versed on criminal law. I think you see a level of confusion setting in, like, oh, did I just vote for that or did I just vote for this, or was that the same thing? And
Amendment 15 and Amendment 33 are in conflict with each other and stuff like that. I mean, we see that all the time, you know. You know, and when we see these amendments, we're trained to pick them apart. That's what lobbyists do. But one of the things they do, anyway. But many who are not familiar with the criminal code, and since that's what we deal with, the criminal code, and we also deal with the wildlife code, don't understand that, you know. And we talked about the thing at federal courthouses. That's a federal matter. I meant to bring that up, you know. There are federal rules against that. So that's outside that purview also of the concealed carry law. Concealed carry law is going to primarily deal with state and private property is where it's going to go. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And so we're trying to determine where you can and where you can't, and that's an ongoing debate. Well, let's see, there's 82 of them. I can't remember. I'd say any amendment that doesn't have superseding language in it can have conflicting language with another amendment.
Right. There was one. I know there was some of the alcohol.
Yeah. Ones that's an example.
Would be just that. So you know, there was one that limited it in bars.
Right.
And then one that limited it in in establishments that sold alcohol.
Right. It's so, like the, you know, we're in one now.
Right.
You know, well, these policemen were in violation. I hope they arrest themselves.
The biggest, say that a lot of it's been an education process. What's been the biggest kind of educational piece you guys have wanted to give to lawmakers? The biggest thing that they don't understand about what's going on here?
Well, a lot of them don't understand very much about firearms at all. A lot of them don't understand some of the things that they read. I don't think the internet has helped either one of us here very much. Okay. You get the internet legend out there that is mostly baloney, you know. It's actually something else, but in this room it's baloney.
I would say for us it's this the biggest hurdle has been because we've been such an opponent of any kind of carry that now as we have to move into addressing some kind of carry, that there is this May issue. And for 20 years, how long has this been going on?
I started with the first one I remember is in 1994, which is 19 years ago.
So for basically 20 years, it's been there's shall issue and no issue. And there is this compromise or middle ground. I don't know.
Well, New York's been around for a long time, and right. California with May issue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they've been existing. There's 10 states that have it. A lot of states that are now shall issue started off as May issue.
There are 39 states with shall issue.
Right. And what we've seen, so it's not that it's this new concept that ICHV or our side of the issue just came up with, you know, in January. It's been out there, but there just hasn't been this education process or discussion about it.
There appears to be some level of agreement on range training. What do you think that would accomplish for a new shooter, and would there be repeated training required?
Well, the range training makes sure that the person has the skill to defend themselves and not harm others, which very seldom does happen. But we want to make sure that I think that the training aspect of this is important, particularly the range training. In the class, you would get firearm safety, okay? How to safely handle a firearm, how to clean the firearm to make sure it works, how to shoot, storage, methods of carrying safely, because a lot of people have these really goofy ideas of how they're going to carry their firearm. Okay, and so that gives you gives those people an opportunity to understand the methods that work and those that don't.
But specifically the shooting at the range and the frequency of training, I want to get some sense of whether any of that has been based on, you know, statistics from other states as far as...
Well, ours is patterned after probably Florida. Florida is where we would come in at. There's some states out there that require no training, like Utah. No range training. I didn't say that properly. It requires you go through the class, but no range training. And then you got places like Wyoming, most of Montana, Arizona, and Alaska. You know, they don't even have. Almost don't even have a background check. Here you go, buddy. Have a nice day. Okay. So that kind of thing is out there.
And I would say ours is probably based more on New York and California, but it's the same logic behind it, that if you're going to have a gun and you're going to carry it in public places, and if you it comes down to, you know, as much as Richard maintains it's not that the guns are fired. If that gun's fired, and I think we would agree on this as well, you want to make sure that you're not hurting, injuring, or putting yourself at risk or other people, unintended victims. So I think having that training, you know, is a crucial part, and having range training is certainly something that also before people start carrying in public, you want to make sure. And that was one of the amendments, was that you train on the gun you're going to carry concealed, so that way you know how that gun operates that you have on your person at that time.
You both agree that amendment is critical to whatever.
Well, we probably agree that both agree on training. The right. Carrying a gun that you are going to carry limits you too much because of different weather conditions, different clothing you're wearing. You know, you may want to change out your firearms. You know, I prefer a metal firearm rather than one that's partially polymer. But in a hot summer day, it's going to be partially polymer. Okay, so.
Do either of you have a position on maybe the Lieutenant Governor's group that she's put together with the freshman lawmakers? I mean, is that something you support? Do you think it's doing anything?
Well, we're on it.
Yeah, we're both on
we're
it.
Both
we
on
both,
it.
Our organizations
have... coming across as unbiased, is it changing any?
I was only able to get to one meeting, and the discussion was good there.
Yeah.
But, you know, once again, it was discussion. What's binding there? Right. Nothing. You know, it did, you know, got to meet new people, though.
Right. Yeah, that was good. But I do think that it's, you know... there was some talk about trying to take not only city legislators to rural areas, but rural areas to city. urban areas, and I think those are, and I don't know if that's happened or not, but I think just starting that discussion is really the key, is part of the key to it. And I mean, I don't know, as Richard said, I mean, I thought the discussion was good. We'll see what comes out of it. But it is, obviously, it's a complicated issue, or you guys won't be spending your Saturday here, right?
It's like LaShawn Ford's committee last year. Mm-hmm. You know, people spent a lot of time in it, and what actually came out of it? Nothing. You know, nothing. Yeah. I mean, there were people, you know, I couldn't go to them, so the president of the association, Don Rand, went and attended the meetings. He couldn't even find out when the meetings were. I mean, sometimes, you know, they'd have meetings and they wouldn't announce to the members who were on the committee when the meetings were. This is an example of how government works in Springfield. You know? Oh, didn't we?
Well, and I think with Representative Ford's task force, you know, there was a not only issues like that, but there was also this kind of a resolute. I mean, I think this court decision over our head has really changed the debate,
yeah, exactly,
or the conversation. Where before it was, you know, we would go in and here's our line and Richard's line's here and there's this gap in between and we're not going to get there. And now it's, we've got to get there.
Now we got to get there. Yeah.
Why can't the two of you or your group sit down with one lawmaker who would be willing to and draft some kind of legislation and then go out and sell that?
Because there's 176 lawmakers that wouldn't agree with that.
But yeah, if you have the two major players coming together and making compromises in pro and anti and maybe asking some of the other groups, wouldn't that be a sign to lawmakers that we
can
I think some of the issues that we disagree on, we'll probably never agree on.
Yeah, we won't.
And so to sit down, so to get to that point, where there's just one version, I don't know if that would happen.
But you're eventually going to end up with one version anyway.
Well, yeah, but it may be the court's version. So you know, and see, one of the things that we have is we have a court case. And so there are certain things that we won't do. We won't do a May issue. We just won't do it, you know, because we know how it discriminates against people. We think it discriminates the poor and against minorities particularly. And so we won't do that. The mass transit is another issue that our members insist on because we have many of our members in the city of Chicago who want to be able to do that. You know, and so it becomes intractable, so it's going to wind up who can put the most votes on the bill. Or off the bill.
Yeah. I mean, I think we look at it on the May issue part as we have decisions outside of Illinois that say May issue works and is past court muster. So things like that.
Well, it says it's constitutional.
Right.
Whether it works or not, it's my difficulty.
But we also, I mean, like things like public transportation are issues or, you know, one of the bills that or amendments that passed last week was language that Representative Ann Williams brought out about alcohol in public places because she has a lot of street festivals and fairs in her district, which is up in the north side of Chicago. She worked with Representative Jim Durkin from the western suburbs about some concerns that he had on how to balance the neighborhood, you know, if it's a church festival versus a huge Taste of Chicago type event. And then I think it was Representative Kay, and I could be wrong about that, but a downstate member got up and said, hey, I've got a lot of these issues down in my community. Can we talk about that? So it's kind of one of the things, and one out of what, 84?
Yeah,
where we've seen exactly what you're talking about.
Only 83 to go.
So, but I do think that as that mindset changes, that this is going to have to either be done by the legislature or the court will impose whatever the court decides. And I think lawmakers are really starting to figure that out and are hopefully coming around to coming up with some kind of agreement that, as I said before, both of us will probably not, not probably, that I'm sure neither one of us will 100% like. And
so, you know, and both of our members will say, you sold us out. Right. It doesn't matter.
What power does Rahm Emanuel have in the discussion?
Well, Rahm Emanuel is very much opposed, I think, to any kind of concealed carry legislation. And so, a lot of the things that come forward come from the city of Chicago, which I'm sure he has input on.
Yeah, I would assume he has input. I think, you know, when you talk about his level of power, I mean, obviously he's the mayor of the largest city in the state. He has been a vocal opponent to allowing concealed weapons in public places from his time as
forever
chief of on the Clinton administration. So I think, you know, there's certainly going to have to be and not just Mayor Emanuel as this single individual, but I think there's going to have to be some discussion about what is best for Chicago in the discussion.
There are residents around the state who feel very passionately one way or the other on this issue. When you hear from people who you feel may be tipping toward making more emotional arguments than rational arguments, what do you say to someone who is so entrenched when it comes to their feeling as you try to represent that?
Well, for one thing, most of the stuff, when they have it, I understand the emotional argument, but they are blind to the facts and blind to the law when they make those arguments, I think.
Yeah.
I said that they're blind to the facts and blind to the law. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, some people who have a any kind of belief, there's always a group on the fringe of any kind of belief that is irrational.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, so, you either explain it to them, or at the end you say, well, that's just the way it is. I mean, there's no way you can answer a question a person who has an emotional argument that goes against the facts.
Yeah, I think with a lot of the emotional arguments, they're not all this just irrational argument.
No, they're not.
If you have that conversation with people who are strictly coming from an emotional point, whether on our side of the issue or Richard's, because Richard's right, there's, you know, that on every issue. There's some people that I say this all the time. You can't have a rational conversation with irrational people. I can have a rational conversation with emotional people. Sometimes they agree with me. Sometimes they don't. When they don't, you agree to disagree. And that's, you know, that's not guns. That's policy. That's life. So I think, to your point, I think the emotional issue certainly is a part of it. But when you have the irrational issue, that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, well, the irrational people on both sides of this argument kind of don't help the argument at all, I guess. Yeah. You know, because, you know, you're trying to work out something that will work, and, you know, it's either my way or the highway, in the end, the other winds up on the highway. So,
what, in listening to reading coverage of this entire debate, what's been the one thing you would have wanted to see more of, and what's the one thing you guys want to see less of, either like a term or the way it's covered, that kind of stuff?
Well, I would like to see it all the issues go back to the committee process, actually.
In terms of how it's reported on, for example, like, what are you seeing from reporters that you think is being done well and not being done so well in covering this, this whole process?
I don't know how to answer that.
for me, it's really two things. I think one of the things that always kind of irks me is the use of the term gun control. And I don't know if it was Richard or Todd Vandermeid from the NRA who once told me when I first started in the job that gun control is the ability to hit your target. And while I'm in full support of that, my job is about reducing gun violence.
Yeah.
And And that's how I view it. And so that's one of my things, is that it's not about, it's about how do we reduce violence. It's not about I want to make sure everybody can hit their target or use their gun to go hunting and are successful in that. And the other thing that I would say, that, and this might be more of a Chicago issue, but that's where I live, is we talk about numbers of people affected by gun violence. So it's 806 children killed in 6 years in Chicago, or it's 1,000 a year, and there's just this number. And I think it desensitizes us. It's almost like, oh, where are the White Sox at in the box score today? Oh, they're up a game, they're down a game. And this is the emotional argument I hear with a lot of the people in groups I work with. After Sandy Hook, it was, why are these 20 kids more important than the 20 kids in Chicago who were killed over Memorial Day weekend? And so those would be the two things I would say.
The other thing is, I think that I don't think we relate a lot of the violence comes from not guns, but guns are certainly used sometimes, but from the, we're seeing a quagmire of conditions, that nobody seems to be willing to address, right. And I'm not saying that they're easy to address. I'm not making that claim, but we see a huge dropout rates. We see no economic opportunity for young people. We see all those kinds of things that are the kind of the fire that makes the pot boil. If you're a young person and you're in Chicago, all right, and so you, for whatever reason, and there are many, and that's another topic for another 3 or 4 years, drop out of school when you're a freshman or don't just refuse to go or whatever you just do. What are you going to do for a living? Tell me. Okay, are you going to become a doctor? Nah, probably not. Are you going to drive a truck? Nah, probably not. Are you going to maybe work in a restaurant? Probably so. But when you go home from work at night and you know that if you're working in that a certain job that you've got without a high school education at age 17, that you're going to be in that job at age 57. So and then some guy goes by with a cool Escalade with big wheels, and we figure out, what's that guy do? Oh, he's Joe, the local drug dealer. Well, maybe I want to do that too. If you look at the amount of murders, not only in Chicago, but throughout this country, that are drug-related, you'll find it's about, what, 90%? 90% of them. So there's some way we have to, A, get a handle on the drug problem. They make sure that people have a place to work and the ability to get the job if they have it, And we can't keep doing some of the dumb things that we're doing. I mean, we're doing some dumb things, and what's it do? It makes the problem worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. I mean, we have children who are having children, and so most of those children wind up being part of this problem, one way or the other. They're either the perpetrator or the victim, but they wind up being part of the problem. And so we got to figure out how to stop that. Until we stop that, all this talk about gun control and all gun violence, all that stuff, we just keep putting Band-Aids and salves on a festering sore. We got to figure out what the cause of the sore is. And those are the causes of the sore, and we got to fix them.
And I would say on that, we also see in not just homicides and gun crimes, but you also see a large number of suicides, and that's an issue we don't talk about. And your success rate between taking pills or running the car in the garage and using a gun when you commit suicide, if you use a gun, you're significantly more successful. And that's – so there's other issues, and that's it's more than just the gun and the bullets that go into gun crime. And as Richard said, there are difficult issues to talk about. But we do need to have that conversation. But at the same time, it's that easy access to guns. I tell the story. I first became engaged in or knowledgeable of the issue when I was 12, and my friend, who was a son of a Chicago cop, went home after he liked a girl at a party who didn't like him. We made fun of him. He went home, took his father's service pistol, stuck it in his mouth, and blew off his head. 2 weeks later, another friend of mine did the same thing. What it was obviously there were issues besides me making fun of a 12-year-old, right? But he went home and had that easy access to a firearm. And when you're 12 and you know, Melissa doesn't like you, it's the most devastating thing. When you're 16, it's like, oh, well, that sucks. And when you're 45, you're like, that's life.
Yeah, but you got to get to 45.
Right.
First.
And he, yeah, exactly. And so that to me, I mean, that's one of the things as well, is that it's not just the black and brown issue. It's a universal issue. And to say, oh, it's just one neighborhood in Chicago or one neighborhood on the east side of Aurora is really doing a disservice.
Do you expect to see any movement on other gun-related issues, assault weapons ban, any of that kind of talk in Illinois, or is concealed carry sucking the oxygen out of the room?
I think it's taking a lot of the oxygen.
It's taking a lot out. I think some of those things, not necessarily the assault weapons ban, but I think that some of those other issues, lost or stolen, universal background check, some of those things I think will be, or I'm optimistic will be in whatever the final legislative piece is.
What would be something that each of you, either personally or your organization, if whatever side came to you and said, you give this up, we've got it. Is there one thing that you guys are willing to say, we are okay without it being in there if we get everything else?
I will say that probably at this meeting we're not okay with saying any of that.
We agree on that too.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure that we both think about that, but I don't think that we are going to probably take a position on it other than say that that's a problem. And my area of expertise is not in drugs nor their use of them, but and I'm sure Mark's isn't either. But somebody has to start figuring out what we're going to do with this stuff. You know, and marijuana is an issue, but you look at what happens to the people who are making the methamphetamines. I worked in the youth commission, which is the youth prison system, for a while. Those people are goofy, okay, and they don't get ungoofy after taking them either. You know, pretty seldom anyway.
Yeah, as an organization, we don't have a position on decriminalization or anything. I'll say this personally. I mean, the legislature can't even pass legislation that would allow people dying access to medical marijuana. So I think getting, you know, as long of a road as this has been to hoe, I think that's an even...
That's going to be even uglier.
Yeah. I mean, so...
But
I do think it needs at some point to come up when you look at prison overcrowding and things like that, and there's, you know... That's an issue.
You look at prison overcrowding, but then if you look at the people you let out of prison, what happens? They get involved in crime again. So we have this problem. The only thing I can think to do is just make Illinois a prison, and we're just all in it.
So.
Because the speaker wants it to. That's easy. That is your answer. It's not any harder than that.
Yeah.
Okay. Guess
and if you can figure out what Mike Madden is thinking, you've made a career for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does everybody all agree now that if we don't pass a bill, we have constitutional carry? I know there's someone who came down and said, didn't really have to pass a bill.
Well, I'm sure that will happen. And then I'm not sure what happens after that. I think that I wouldn't want to see that happen. I have a very selfish reason for wanting to have the training requirement in there, Because I know that if we have people now who aren't probably not gun owners, okay, and they think they need a firearm to protect themselves, or they want a firearm to protect themselves, or whatever the reason, they're American citizens, they can have that. But one of the things they're going to get is a lesson in gun safety, a formal lesson in gun safety. And they are going to carry that lesson in gun safety into their homes and impart it to their spouse, their children, and others they meet. And so that's one of the reasons I think that that's important.
Yeah, I think the majority of people believe that if we don't have legislation, there will be some constitutional carry, or at least people who are trying to prove that they have that constitutional carry right. And I think that's a concern, you know, as Richard said, that all of us share to varying levels. I don't want to get to the ninth and figure out if we got it or we don't have it, is I guess my, and I think a lot of groups are in that same
There's
position.
A couple of things that I think we probably both learned. One is that when you pass a bill based on a motion, it usually is really a lousy bill. Okay. That's one of the things I think that we see. And when we have to pass a bill in a hurry, that becomes the same thing because things get overlooked. The worst things we have in law are the unintended consequences. And so you'll get people who are sucked in. You know, if you get the Cook County State's Attorney says, doesn't matter whether they declared the UUW statute unconstitutional or not, I'm going to enforce it. Well, if you do that, and so I go up there and I'm carrying it, I get arrested. And then you think of how many people, I mean, they can't get people through the courts now. You know, that's going to plug the court system up. Plus the fact that every one of those people are going to file a Section 1983 lawsuit, which is a civil rights suit against any entity that arrested them. So that's going to put, these entities who do that, you know, that could well put them in a bind, because if you lose a 1983 lawsuit, you get to pay the plaintiff's charges and penalties as well as your own. If cities start losing those things, they won't last long.
The state police sergeant alluded earlier to the increased prices for guns currently. I wondered if either of you would comment on the market for guns and whether the debate happening in Springfield or around our state has had any impact on that.
You're talking about the increased prices for firearms?
About the market in general.
Market in general has been very, very busy. And firearms, if you go out to the big retailers, and you have one in the city here, Shields is the example, and Ganderbaum's another one, you know, if you go out there, you'll find that there's empty spots in the racks, and they buy huge amounts at a time, you know, but people like their firearms, they want their firearms, and they're very worried that the government's going to take their firearms away from them, and they want to make sure they have one before that happens. And so whatever you think of that idea, that's what they think. And
we've seen nationally is while firearm sales are up, the amount of people buying firearms is decreasing. So it's people that own guns buying more guns. It's not creating new markets. And so I think part of the fear mongering on the national level is, oh, my guns are going to be taken. You better buy them now before they're taken. If you look at the board of the NRA, the majority of their board are gun manufacturers or ammunition manufacturers. So it helps them sell their guns and make a profit if there's this fear that people are going to lose their right to have guns. I don't necessarily know if that's I don't think it's because of what's going on in Illinois. I think it's more of this national.
Yeah, it's a national trend, but I disagree with that. I know some of the guys. I know Steve Hornaday is the only one I know that actually makes anything on the board, but I'll have to look.
Well, we can. We got to disagree on something.
Well, we do. Yeah. So, anyway, where was I going with this? I forgot. That one. I got derailed from the answer I'm going to give you. But
neither of you think that the concealed carry debate happening in the spring?
Oh, no, I know where I was going. The answer is yes, I do. If you look at the number of FOID cards that were there 3 years ago, which is 1.1 million, and now it's 1.5 million, that's 400,000 increase. So you had 1.1 million, went to 1.5 million. That's a significant increase in the people who are FOID card holders. So those are all new people. Okay. It's about 3 years. 3 years. And right now, the state police have a 71,000 FOID card backlog, last time I heard. But that was last week. It could be 72,000 by now. But and then you know, we run into another problem in that they're required to produce those FOID cards or deny them within 30 days, and we're at 90. You know, do I expect the FOID division to arrest themselves at any moment? You know, so.
I think part of that increase, though, in the FOID cards that Richard's talking about, you know, is also in the time period that you're now able to be a legal gun owner in the city of Chicago. So I don't know how new of it might be people becoming more law-abiding.
Well, there's a lot of people who, and I haven't been able to get the statistics, but I know that they went up the number of legal gun owners in the city of Chicago was about 94,000, and now with FOID cards, I mean, you know. And I think now it's 121. So that's more than a 20% increase. So it's not large, but people in the city of Chicago have been kind of under the thumb of Mayor Daley and now Mayor Emanuel for many years, and Mayor Daley's dad. So they want the right to protect themselves, and that's why they're going through the process. You haven't seen the number of firearm permits, Chicago firearm permits, go up that much because it's kind of hard to get. But I know on the way down here today, I got two calls from two different people who live in the city wanting to know where they can get a Chicago firearm permit class. Of course, I'm driving the car and just have them at my fingertips. But anyway, so we see that happening. So I don't totally agree with Mark on that issue. We got our half hour in there.
Yeah.
I think it's more than half.
Well, I just want to say thank you for.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we were talking about this before we came in about, you know, this is an opportunity that we don't always get, and I think you guys should really commend yourselves for doing
exactly.
And
it's go Saturday. Give yourself a gold star.
It's more or less.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Was this conversation more or less substantive than what's happening at Capitol?
I would say it's more substantive.
I would say more.
I would say at least twice as much.
Yeah, I would say we have a lot, what's happening on the floor. I think this is way more substantive. I think we're also having substantive conversations about next steps and things like that from both sides. But this was by far, to me, more substantive.
Yeah, and it took a lot less time.
Right.
See, as our role as the media on this issue.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
What do you see as our responsibility?
Well, I think your responsibility is to report the news fairly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all we asked for. I was glad to see the state police here. With a display of firearms. Many of you may not be familiar with firearms, and truly, I probably had one or more of everything to play on the table. But and I thought it was an auction. I was very upset. But anyway, if any of you have questions about firearms or how they work, you know, please feel free to give me a call. We see things in the paper that actually kind of make you look uninformed, you know. last year there was a report out of Springfield that somebody wrote, maybe you, maybe not, of the automatic revolver. There's no such thing as an automatic revolver. Okay, and other things like that. And so you know, technical questions, you can call the state police, but or you can call me, I don't care. But you know, I'm always glad to help you out with the technical aspects of this stuff, because it's sort of it's just better if people read the article, and people who report something to people who are familiar with the topic, and you report it improperly, they think you're either not smart or biased. So
is the phrase assault weapons getting in the way of progress here when it comes to coming up with legislation? Because we were just told by state police they're really...
Well, actually what we've seen is the term assault style weapons. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you looked at the old M16 land here, you know, which is the one on this corner over here. You know, that was an assault weapon. That's a fully automatic weapon. We disagree that assault weapon is a gun that looks like that semi-auto. You know, well, Mark may looks at it differently.
But
you know, so we disagree that if you actually look up, you know, bandolier torpedoes. You probably don't know what those are. You probably don't have any at home in the closet either. But you know, those are assault weapons. Those are bombs you put on the end of a stick and stick under a wall of some kind and blow up. But that was a great term on the anti-gun side. They're just semi-automatic rifles, and the functioning of a semi-automatic shotgun, a semi-automatic .22, and a semi-automatic high-power rifle are all the same. So when you ban one, you got to be careful you don't ban them all, that sort of thing. So it all gets jumbled up, and the nomenclature and the jargon makes it all come, makes it like pea soup. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's what it really does.
Where do you draw the line? What doesn't belong in the hands of citizens and what would?
I'm willing to go with fully auto stuff, you know, and we have a ban on that in Illinois. We have a licensing procedure nationally, and so it takes you a $200 tax on the things. And the only one I actually ever know of that got used in a crime was from the Fort Wayne Police Department. A cop stole it out of the police locker and shot somebody and put it back. He got caught, though. Didn't work. Hate that when it happens. I'm sorry, say that again.
Any comment on you know, issues in Washington, D.C. as you're observing them?
Well, we're kind of a microcosm here, I'd say, of what's going on in Washington, D.C. You know, I think it's the same kind of general issue. I think it's more emotional. You know, you talk about the assault weapons and the, you know, like the M16, there were 384 of those used in crimes last year throughout the United States. I just got that last night off TV. So anyway, they were talking about there were 384 of those. Well, there are more baseball bats than that used, you know, and that sort of thing. So the things that are used in crimes are actually handguns, you know, actually. And so... So the thing that we see that are big, though, are stuff like the Newtown and the Colorado thing, that sort of stuff. That's what you see. But it turns out Newtown didn't use a rifle. They used handguns. The rifle didn't work. It was in the trunk of a car. It never went inside the school. So some of that time, we get all this misreporting, and then misreporting really doesn't do anybody any good, to be honest with you, because now all that story that came out of there, everybody says, well, it wasn't true, so you know how those press people are, and you would know better than we how you are. But you know, so we find out that we reported something as fact turned out was totally untrue. We got to really watch that. So jumping to conclusions is all. And I know you guys are hungry for the story, and I would be too. But jumping to conclusions is a problem. Huh? Oh yeah, yeah. But when it comes to jumping to conclusions, the people at the Springfield would be Olympic champions if it was a sport.
To me, I think what we see, what watching the and being a very minute part of what's going on the national level, that concerns me is it's almost like tobacco was in the 90s, that the gun industry is the last unregulated industry, and what we're seeing is not necessarily on assault weapons ban, but on the universal background check bill and things like that, that we know work, and Congress and the Senate are have people that are afraid to pick that issue up because of the pressure being put on them by the NRA, and yet even public opinion polling showing, you know, over 90% of people across the country support it, as well as self-proclaimed NRA members. So to me, it's the same kind of thing. You're seeing this massive amount of political pressure that doesn't always correlate with popular opinion. And I think that's a concern, not just on this issue, obviously, but on any issue. So one of the things that struck me as different than years past is people on our side of the issue who often can be a tad bit defeatist have been like, wait a minute, this is out of control and we need to do something. Not like, oh, well, we lost another one to the NRA. So that's a change that I take as a positive. People standing up for their democratic small d rights.
See, and I look at it somewhat differently. You know, smoking cigarettes is not a constitutional right, but the right to keep and bear arms is. So, you know, those sorts of things. The other thing is when you do the polling, I can get an answer out of you by how I couch the question. So I look at some of these polls. And
Richard's, you know, great at that.
Yeah, I am.
No, but I mean, but consistently you've seen.
It's like questions like, do you still use soap? What's the answer to that? You still beat your mother?
So, I mean, I do think that, you know, at least on the polling side of things, we've consistently seen nationally the same numbers, with the exception of one or two polls.
Oh, right, ours. But anyway, so, you know, you have to, you know, so a lot of this, you know, I'm not sure what polling proves, you know. I bet we've been involved in politics for a long time, both of us, and we've seen polls that the pollsters must have been in another district. Look, they weren't ours. So.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. So you finally outlasted them.
Yeah.
For those of you who are coming with us to the FBI, there are maps right here. We have been asked not to bring cell phones or cameras into the building. They said leave them in the car. It just makes it easier on everybody.
Oh, you're going out to the FBI?
Yeah, we're
going to
give us a little tour.
We'll see if you come out.
We park outside the fence, right? We don't go in.
That I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
There's a security gate there.
Yeah.
We'll let you know.
Yeah, let us know.
You're really good about that.
Sure they are. Oops. Step on. Yeah, I'm sure they would.